Hey everyone, this is Lindsay LeCue recording for you today for our Diablo and LeCue podcasts, where we coach you to become your own badass. So I'm starting my podcasts back up again after a bit of a break, which I'll explain why we've had a break from them. To start at the beginning, really, and talk to you a little bit more about my history and why I set up my business, why me and my sister Diablo Rose also set up our new venture Diablo and LeCue, and a little bit more about my personal journey, which I think has contributed a lot to why I set up Diablo and LeCue and why I'm really passionate about coaching other women, and why I believe that adversity doesn't have to be something that blocks you or stops you from creating the dream life that you want. And what I've been through and the heartbreak that I've experienced and what I did during that time to get through it, and also what I've learned from it. So I'm going to start off telling you a little bit more about where I came from. I started my business about 11 years ago now, but prior to that, I did something completely different. I was always massively interested in business at school. I did Young Enterprise, which I think is the most amazing scheme, and it certainly ignited my passion. So if you're in the UK, look that up. It's such an amazing thing if you know a young person in your life to get involved in. And it taught me the basics of running a business. And I remember going into that room thinking to myself, with this group of other colleagues from my school and other schools, if they don't make me managing director of this school's business enterprise project, I'm walking out. I was that determined that I wanted that kind of life, and this was my first step of doing that. And luckily, I managed to convince them, and we set up a little business doing a modeling agency. And we won a few rounds and in the competition and in the UK for young businesses, and I absolutely loved it. And even before that, I remember setting up my own jewellery stands at the school craft fairs, and going with my granny in her hometown in Stratford to a little jewellery bead shop, and looking at the price of these beads and thinking, these are 1p and 5p and 10p. If I make these all up, I can sell something that cost me 20p for £2. And even at 10, 12, whatever age it was, that transactional nature excited me. The thought that I could buy something for one price, add my own value to it, and sell it for more. I don't know why, it just really struck a chord with me. And ever since then, I always wanted to start my own business. And I didn't really know that what that was going to be, even until my early mid-20s, really. So stepping forward a little bit, I did business studies at A levels. I went on to do business and management degree just outside London, and did a year in industry, and that landed me in public service of all things, which wasn't the direction I knew I was going to go in to start off with. I worked in the Mayor's office, the Greater London Authority, and I worked on project management, and that struck a chord with me as well. I loved the organisational nature of things. I loved bringing all different teams together and creating something of greater value from all of them, and the skills it taught me. I really went down the Prince 2, and anyone from that corporate background will know what I'm talking about. Lots of, really went down the path a lot of management and corporate philosophies and techniques, and kind of got a taste of that. Finished university and got a job in public service again. I worked for a local authority in Warwickshire, and within that team I was in an internal consultancy, so I would be part of a team going into other areas of the council and essentially finding efficiency savings, which I love the idea of. I'm sure it's not news to anyone that local authorities are big, clunky, bureaucratic organisations, and the idea that I could go in and save some money, save some taxpayers' money, that excited me. However boring that might sound to other people, I enjoyed that, and I did actually make savings. And I then went on to have to sort of jump into a higher career in Oxfordshire County Council, and I learned a lot more about business process re-engineering, which I still use to this day. And people who know me know I talk about process mapping and they laugh at me because I have a salon and a party business and I process map everything. But again, it's a key essential skill that's taught me how to franchise my business and means that every single new recruit in our business goes through the same set of training and has the same set of instructions and standards to work to. And doesn't matter how fluffy and pretty and well branded things look from the outside, especially in my industry and beauty, etc., it's the core business principles behind it that makes you successful. And my career before that really helped me to build my business. So I developed into a program manager role where I'd manage other projects as well, which I loved. And then I went into another project management role in employment services. So again, public sector, but out of local authority. And I did that for a year and I was working from home and I travel all over the country, going to factories and working with people from so many different disciplines, kind of teaching them how to use business principles to improve you know, how efficient they were with spending their budgets and everything like that. And I loved all that work, but there was still this fire in my belly to start my own business. And I started to do things on the side. I would organise events at local venues, burlesque nights, ticketed events, themed dirty dancing, which, by the way, my first event was a total disaster and no one came. And I didn't stop there. I just carried on. I found a much smaller venue and filled that, you know. So and from there, then add-ons came on. I met a group of women who we had this really complementary set of skills. There was a makeup artist, a photographer, a baker, and we got together and started doing packages, and they sort of all gradually moved on to their own things, and I continued doing those packages within my own brand. And it all went from there, really. And after a year or so of working on all weekend and doing what they call the 5 to 9ers, so get home from work, finish my working day, and I would then work all night and early morning the next morning on my own business. And it got to a crunch point where I would literally be crying in the bath on a Sunday night thinking, I can't do early start events all weekend, lugging things all over the country, and then go to work again on Monday and then work on my business again at night. And luckily we were in a position where my husband could support me to quit my job, and I went from a really high salary to whatever I could pay myself at the end of the month from the business. And I truly believe quitting my daytime job and taking that massive step gave me the space and brain space, I believe, to work on my business. And I had to make that decision to go from being able to afford whatever we wanted and move from a big house in the country back to our little house in a town, and that was a lot cheaper, and those sacrifices were worth it because, you know, I've been able to build the business and we've moved again. So that's essentially what happened from my career to my business. And the business has grown, thankfully, from strength to strength. I moved into my first premises a few months after, or a year after, quitting my main job, and we moved into the Custard Factory in Birmingham, where we still reside now in a different unit. And that was successful for a couple of years, ploughed all my heart and soul. I mean, I sacrificed my social life, my poor husband was neglected, I was so stressed out in a lot of ways, even though from the outside people looked like I was burning the candle at both ends, and I'm sure it looked to them like that I was working too hard, but it was so important to me to build that, and my passion made it enjoyable for me. So if you're doing this and you look and people keep telling you you're working too hard or you're making yourself stressed out, my advice is don't listen and do what makes you happy and do what drives you. And if that drive sometimes does create what might look like stress to the outside world, believe me, putting that time in early on means you can live the life you want later on, which I'm thankful that I'm at now. So and then we opened up another branch in Leeds, and my sister had come into the business a year or two before, was doing loads of different things. My sister is Diablo Rose, who now has built her own incredible brand as well and is still a big part of the Le Cue business. And we started working together and she started inputting all her graphic design expertise. That's what she did at uni. And also makeup artistry, which she had a natural talent for, and hair. And I have to say, you know, I obviously started teaching her hair. She's obviously gone above and beyond any skill set I had at the start. But we started off that way and she just ran with it. And so she was, you know, working events with me every weekend in a job that she didn't enjoy, that wasn't her passion. So we took the leap and started, opened up a salon in her hometown in Leeds. And she's running that and still to this day is, with the help of another deputy manager now. And then we started our own cosmetics range, which we'll do a whole separate podcast on, because that's another interesting story about going into manufacturing and product development, which was completely new to us. And, you know, we made mistakes, we rectified those mistakes, we did a first range, we improved that range, now we've got another range out. And that again was all a response to demand, really, and feeling a passion for something that we felt we weren't able to stock from any other brands in our salons, so we created it ourselves. And then the next step in the business really was franchising. So I felt I created an effective business model that other people could also run under the Le Cue brand. So launched that and sold our first franchise last year. And it's down in Exeter and it's absolutely beautiful down there. And she's doing a great job running that. So that's where we are today. And then now I'm at a point where my business has incredible women working. I can't tell you how grateful I am to have found these people who not only have wonderful creative skill sets, and they're able to do the hair and the makeup and everything like that within our businesses, but incredible business minds as well. So they run my branches and do an amazing job of that, and I trust them implicitly. And it's given me the space to you know, live my personal journey, which I'll talk about in a bit, and then also to free up my brain to do other things that I'm passionate about. So of course I still oversee the business and I'm still very much the one running the cosmetic side, but I also wanted to do more, and a passion of mine is building businesses and startup and coaching and identifying where people might need help to get from their miserable job to their dream life, which, you know, I've still got a long way to go in all the things I want to achieve in life, but I'm definitely on my journey and I feel like I just absolutely love trying to help people do that. And that's where Diablo and Le Cue came along. So my sister and I got together and with our unique set of skills put those together. And now we're creating free content for people. I'm creating business courses. She's doing a social media academy. We're doing ebooks on beauty and business and mini videos, which will be free to go out soon. And these podcasts will continue on all different disciplines of business and talking to you guys about what we've learned and what we can share. And that really is a passion and something that I'm building now and working on. So that's my journey in terms of business. And really what I want to talk about today is my personal journey, because over the past four years now, I've learned a huge amount and gone through some real heartache with my husband and I's journey to have a child. And it was surprisingly one of the times in my life where I was just the absolute most lowest, yet my business was growing at the largest pace. And I think that was because I chose to channel that lack of control over my life, my ability to create a child, into something that I could create and I could grow and I could be successful at. And it's my personal way of dealing with things, and I'm not saying that strategy helps you emotionally necessarily, because you still feel the sadness and heartbreak, but it certainly got me through and got me focused and got me to spend every day at least doing something that fulfilled me, rather than focusing 100% on the sadness of what we were going through. So we started trying for a baby about 4 years ago. And prior to that, I'd already had health issues, which had hospitalised me. And they were all related to fertility. I had pains for years, went to the doctors, back and forth. And, you know, severe pains that would drop me onto the floor, shaking and shivering. And the doctors kept fobbing me off, saying it was IBS, which they tend to tell you anything, you know. I've spoken to a lot of other people who get fobbed off with IBS, and I said it's not, I know it's gynecological, I know my body. Was referred to specialists, they would do scans and examinations and tell me that everything was okay. And but I kept getting these pains, and it seemed to be a mystery. And that went on for about 3 years, to the point where I actually dropped down in the salon on a busy Saturday, and this wonderful girl who worked for someone who was renting the cafe area off me at the time found me in the stock cupboard on the floor and said, "This is not acceptable. You need to get an ambulance." And at that point, I had been convinced by the doctors I was going to that the pain I was going through was something I needed to accept and was normal. You know, I was told it was what they call Mittelschmerz, I think it is, where it's middle of your cycle pain. So it was ovulation that was causing that pain. I thought, unless my eggs are the size of hen eggs, then going down my tubes, then there's no way that's what the pain is, because it was so excruciating. And so she said no. And she called an ambulance, and I was wheeled off. And luckily, it gave me an opportunity to have all the tests going. And they found an absolutely massive cyst in my ovary that had almost strangulated the ovary. So I had to go in for an emergency operation to remove it, and was told that I might lose my ovary. And when they went in, they found an extensive amount of endometriosis, which again was undiagnosed and does explain the pain as well that I was going through. And went through that operation, and I remember coming round on the hospital bed, and I was grabbing at my air mask going, have you taken my ovary, because my husband and I had already started trying for a baby and hadn't been successful for a few months, and that I think about 4 or 5 months at that point, which obviously wasn't that long, so it wasn't too much of a concern. But I obviously thought this pain might be something to do with that. And I was so petrified of losing my ovary. And I came round, and they were going, why are you panicking? And all these doctors rushed over, and I was just trying to ask them. Immediately, the moment my brain woke up, I wanted to know the answer. And they said they'd saved it, which was just the most incredible news. And even though they had taken away some of the some of the area, they had saved it. But they'd found endometriosis, which they had lasered off as well. So I was put on drugs, which was meant to clear up the endometriosis for a few months, and I wasn't allowed to try during that time. Obviously I couldn't, because of the hormones they put in the body. So that was, you know, a frustrating break, but it was hopefully what my body needed. So once I was over that treatment, we went back to trying again, and nothing happened. And we decided to go and get a diagnosis, and we were put through. And through my husband and I, there turned out to be a combined number of health issues between us, which made them put us straight through for ICSI, which is a form of IVF, where they actually inject one of the sperms into the egg, because, you know, we needed that extra bit of help between the two of us. So we got put forward for that. And, you know, at first I have to say it was exciting, because it hadn't happened for us yet. And I just naively thought this was the solution. You do IVF and you get a baby, because they're making one perfectly. They're putting everything together and they're putting it in you, and it's just going to work. And boy, was I wrong. So we... you know, anyone who's been through IVF knows that it's just the most minute set of hurdles that you have to constantly leap over. And every time you move a step forward, there's a new set of anxiety over whether you'll take the next hurdle and whether you'll be successful. So, you know, just in a nutshell, IVF involves a few months of hormone treatments, where you have to prepare your body and grow your follicles so that they hopefully mature as many eggs as possible. They then remove those eggs under general anaesthetic, And then see whether, you know, they have to check that those eggs are healthy and matured correctly. So you may lose some at that point that aren't appropriate for treatment. They then, from your husband, your partner's donors, whatever sample, they then fertilize the egg. So you have this excruciating wait where you have to wait for the call to find out whether your eggs have fertilized. And usually, I mean, I think the average rate's about 50%, and I think that was about right for us. I can't remember how many they took out now, but I think six fertilized. And then once they fertilized, you then have this excruciating wait of 3 days, then 5 days to find out whether they develop. So whether they then start to develop into these little tiny embryos. And we waited and we got three to day five, which day five is great because they've got all that way and they're progressed. So we had three, and they put the strongest one fresh in. And again, the embryologist said to me, "You've got a really good chance. These are really good, strong embryos. You know, you're young. You're healthy. I'd got obviously, hopefully, gotten rid of those problems before, and I hadn't had any symptoms of the endometriosis since. And by the way, I also completely changed what I was ingesting in my body, which is a whole other story on endometriosis. I'd done some research and found out that chemicals in a lot of our products create what they call phytoestrogens, which basically creates a surplus of estrogen or chemicals which mimic estrogen in your system. So shampoos, conditioners, moisturizers, absolutely everything, cleaning products, also the meat that you eat, if you eat meat, the hormones that they put into meat to make them grow, create estrogen and everything. So I cut all of that out and went completely natural and organic, and I have ever since, and I've never had any symptoms of endometriosis returning. So that for me is a big thing. If anyone wants to contact me to ask me about that, if you're going through it, please do, and I will share everything that I've researched on that. Anyway, so go back to my story. We had three embryos, and of those three, we put in one fresh, and I was so optimistic. I'd had we'd gone and done everything that we should have done, and I'd had holistic therapies to help me, and it was really healthy, and I was in such a good place. And 8 days after that transfer, I woke up and I was bleeding, and I had a meeting that day with a department store to sell our cosmetics range to them, and I can't tell you how devastated I was. I didn't know it was going to happen. It was going to fail so quickly. I thought it took weeks before I would have had a period because of all the hormones I've gone through. So obviously that I just it hadn't worked, and you know it's just devastating. And I got myself up and I got myself dressed and I drove to London and I went to that meeting, and inside I was heartbroken and dying, and just it was just horrendous, and I was bleeding heavily, and I was stood in front of that woman and yeah, I have to say I sold the cosmetics range and she was gonna go for it. So that was, you know, just shows you can put any face on things, and not just saying that, you know, that you should put a face on things, but the reason why I also say that is because you never know what the women around you are going through, and it doesn't matter how upbeat or sunny that they appear, they could be going through anything heartbreaking. And I that's a big thing that I've learned from this whole experience, is to can always be sensitive in what I say and how I act, because you never know what other women are going through. And again, that's a big subject that I can talk forever on, is the sensitivity around IVF, fertility, women with or without children, all of their choices around that. So of course we had two more embryos on ice, so we went, you know, you have to give your body a break, and at that point I just wanted to get start again. You know, you want to just move forward. Okay, we've got two more, let's keep doing this. I just desperately wanted to get pregnant. And so but you have to give yourself a break. And again, one thing I learned from this process is patience. And I think what a big part of my struggle was, anything I'd ever wanted in life I made happen through my own actions, through my own focus and effort. And this was the first thing in life I couldn't make happen. My body didn't work. It wasn't doing what it was supposed to be doing. And as a woman, it's such a fundamentally jarring experience to not be able to do what women are supposed to do. And for me, that was really difficult. And you feel like half a person sometimes, and you feel like half a, you know, you can't do what to some people comes so easily, and biology fails you, and you, you know, to experience a failure in yourself like that, regardless that it's not your fault or your partner's fault or whatever, was really tough for me. So we waited, and then when it was finally time, went back through that process again. Now, of course, you didn't have to do all the egg retrieval this time, so it was hormone treatment to get my body ready. They essentially stop your system, your fertility, your reproductive system from working, and then they kickstart it again, so that then they have a perfectly controlled cycle in which they can time when to put the embryo in. So you go through that drug treatment, and it's injections every day, so you have to inject yourself, and you know, at first that's really freaks you out, and then you sticking those needles in, you know, problem every morning without even thinking of it. And then you know, there's all sorts of fun, there's suppositories, and it's not a glamorous thing, IVF. You're strung up like a butcher shop a lot of the time, with doctors inches away from your business, eight of them at a time, looking right into your soul with a torch. You know, so you do lose all sense of giving a shit about being naked, because everyone's seen everything. But anyway, so we got to the point where we were ready to put the next one in, and of course you have that defrost period, so they obviously defrost it a few hours before you're due to implant the embryo again. So you have to sit at home and wait for them to call you and tell you whether it's defrosted, which I cannot tell you was the slowest morning of your life. My heart was in my mouth, but obviously I'm so conscious of not creating stress hormones in my body, because you want to be calm when that embryo goes in. So your body's telling the signals, you know, this is a safe place for you to attach and snuggle in and that. So I would go for acupuncture in the morning and listen to relaxation meditation CDs and just try. I mean, God, when people tell you you're not getting pregnant because you're stressed out, it's just like you want to punch them in the face, because it's stressful. What am I supposed to do about that? It's really hard. And there are things you can do to calm your body down, but it's really hard. So they implanted that one, and you know, I felt I was excited again once you know that little bean was in there, and we got pregnant that time, but we lost it, and I think I knew right from the start that it wasn't a little strong one, because the lines on the test when I first got them, it was like I never thought I was going to see that line. I never thought I was going to see that line ever. And you just, it was so exciting. And I remember telling my sister and my mum, and it was amazing. And it was so exciting. But for some reason, I just wasn't, I don't know, my instincts were telling me something wasn't strong. And I would, I took a test every day, and that line was not getting darker. And we went in for the official test date they do in the clinic, and she told us very insensitively that it was inconclusive. And we called her Nurse Doom. She was not good bedside manner. I don't know what it is about these IVF nurses, but some of them were incredible. And one of them I still keep in touch with on social media, and she was wonderful. Her name is Jade, and she knows who she is because she was lovely. But there's others that weren't. Anyway, so it got to the point where I left it a few days, and my husband was like, why are you driving yourself so mad? You know, you're pregnant, it's happened. But I was just in an absolute state. I knew it was going to go wrong. And I took a test a few days later, and it was completely blank. There was nothing there. And I knew the little thing had gone. And, you know, looking back, I'm blessed that it happened so early for us, because I know women who've been through it later, and God, it's just so traumatic. And so that was heartbreaking, and
you know, it's devastating for every woman whoever goes through that, and going through it with the combined knowledge that it's so hard to achieve pregnancy and then to lose it was just the darkest time. And I had to find a way to get through, and that was when I really started to plow into the business. And I was in this obsessive mode of listening to audiobooks and podcasts of successful entrepreneurs and really driven people. And I started to develop my own really rigid daily routine, because I had to find a way to be happy or find happiness every day. I had to work on myself every day to not feel abundant sadness, you know, because I felt so incomplete. I felt such a huge hole. I felt so hopeless that I was absolutely convinced we were never going to have children. And I worked on my mindset. So I would have a routine in the morning where I would meditate and visualize and journal. And it was a really big part of my day. And luckily I had the time to input into that, and I would work every morning on going, waking up in a state of sadness to moving my mind into a state of productivity and motivation and a sense of happiness, and what am I going to do today, and what am I going to achieve today, and what am I going to feel good about at the end of today. And I will feel so passionate about the power of what I taught myself to do during that time to get through, because it genuinely changed that experience for me in a way that got me through it. So I did that relentlessly, and I decided it was time to move the business forward. And I built my franchise model. I wrote my franchise manual. I marketed that and was successful in finding an amazing woman who wanted to invest in the first franchise and move forward with that. And that was a big part of what I was doing. I certainly started Diablo and Lequeue at the time because I felt this great passion for the strength I was building, and that adversity didn't necessarily have to mean it was the, you had to crawl under a rock, even though I wanted to do that sometimes. It was about, you know, taking any situation in life and still following your dreams and creating goals and creating new goals. And I believe so much in finding something you're passionate about when another area of your life isn't going well, because you can strike some balance there and alleviate yourself out of misery. So I worked on that, and sort of my husband and I supported each other, and obviously got most amazing family, my mum and dad, and my sister is incredible and supported me through that, and just helped me when I cried and told me it was going to be okay. And I thank them for that, because, and my husband, just amazing. So we had our last little embryo, so about it was March that we lost the little one, and then came around to September, I did my drugs again and was ready to implant our last little embryo. So we got my body ready again, went through the drug hormone sequence, ready to go, waited for that call. And I think it was like they start calling people, I think, if I remember rightly, from about 11, and it got to about 11:30, and I thought, I'm at the end of the list here, because they ring all the people whose eggs have defrosted first. And the anxiety was building in me, and I knew, but you just try and remain hopeful. I got that call, and from the second I heard the nurse's voice from her tone, I knew, because the first call we'd got to say that our embryo had defrosted successfully was, "Hi Lindsay, so we need to get you in at this time," whereas this time it was like, "Hello." I thought, it's not worked. And she said, "I'm so sorry, it's not worked, and your little embryo's not defrosted, and it died." And she didn't say it died, but that's what happened. And that was it. That was the end. You know, no more hope. It was all gone. Our round was just not successful. So, again, I just collapsed and spent a few days just sobbing and not knowing what to do and how we were going to get through doing what... When you go through IVF, it takes so much out of you to go through the emotional trauma of each step, and the hope and the crashing disappointment, and you have to build this strength every time you start again, and it takes so much. Every cell in your body has to go towards building that strength up again, and it's so difficult. So the idea of having to find that strength again was just so exhausting. So the week after that, a very good friend of mine, Helena, had always talked to me about business networking, and she'd said, come along and this might be good for you. And she had no idea what I was going through at the time, because I kept it very, very private. I didn't want anyone to know, because I didn't want people to feel sorry for me. I didn't want to be that sad woman in the room. And I understand some people find sharing gives them strength, but for me, the privacy helped me, because, you know, I wanted me, Lindsay, the businesswoman, to be that woman in the room when I was with those people. I didn't want them to, I didn't want to overshadow what I was doing in my career with this other story that would make people feel sorry for me. And I didn't want people's pity, and I didn't want people's sad little looks. And also, there's a great, it helped me, because when they find out you're going through IVF, are great. Some people think they're trying to help, and I will talk another day about, I'm going to do another podcast on what you can do if you know someone in your life who's going through it, because the insensitivities I experienced were really made it sometimes 10 times worse than it was the day before. People love to give you their advice, and it's so unsolicited sometimes, and other people are amazing. So I protected myself by not even giving people the opportunity to be insensitive, even if it was accidental, which, don't get me wrong, it often was. It was just through ignorance of that situation that people sometimes said the wrong thing. It wasn't because they meant it, you know, of course not, and they wanted to make you feel bad, apart from some people I experienced in my life who unfortunately did say, anyway, really bad. But so I had to find that strength to decide what to do again. And of course, in the UK, we get one round of IVF free, which is incredible. And I understand in other countries, especially the US, you don't get that. And we are so blessed to have the NHS in England. And some, you know, the NICE guidelines in the UK is that a woman needs three rounds in order to be most likely to be successful at IVF. But each local authority don't necessarily follow those rules. So often some local authorities give none in some regions. It's completely unfair. Some give three rounds for free. We have one in my area, so we'd had that one, and it wasn't successful, so we had to then look at private, which is obviously very expensive, and we're very blessed to have the circumstance to be able to afford some things ourselves, and for other for family members to help us too. And I understand incredibly how lucky we are, because I know that is not the case for everyone, and the fact that we could carry on trying through IVF was, you know, a huge, huge gift, however difficult it was. So you know, I'm hoping at some point in my life I can do something to help other people who don't have that gift, and that is a big passion and something that I'm trying to work out how to do myself as well, which again I'll talk about in the future. So we found a clinic that felt was, you know, really effective in their results, and we went to them and we did tests with them, and for once they started focusing a little bit more on my partner rather than me, whereas the NHS had focused very much on my health, and they asked him to do some lifestyle changes. And we were so he made those lifestyle changes and did a huge detox, and the biggest part of that was cutting out sugar. Now my husband's a very healthy, slim, athletic person, but had a high sugar intake, you know, he enjoys sugar, he completely cut that out, cut out alcohol, cut out caffeine, had a lot of high detoxing things such as green vegetables, red fruits, took detox sachets specifically aimed at fertility, and Proxied, I think they're called. And we were then waiting for my next period to start, because that's when you start the drugs routine. And the day my period starts was when the money would get transferred over and we would start our routine. And my period was late, which wasn't necessarily unusual, because stress can obviously make it late. And I was very stressed out about spending all this money. And we just got this letter through the post that told us that despite, you know, everything that we were going to do, due to our combined complex problems, we had less than 20% chance that this IVF was going to work. And we were about to spend five figures on a 20% chance it wasn't going to work. And it wasn't all our money, it was other people's money. And that stressed me out so much that we were taking a financial gamble on something that was traumatic to go through and probably wasn't going to work, and we were never going to have children. And it was heartbreaking and stressful, and but again, just trying to find that strength and trying to get through. And I waited for my period, and I remember sitting down talking to my mum, and she was just about to go on holiday abroad and saying, I'm 4 days late. And she went, oh, you don't think, do you? You don't think? And I said, no, never, absolutely not, I'm not pregnant. And my period was in a week late and 2 weeks late. And, you know, the idea crept in that I might be, but I was so convinced, and I'd learnt at that point this mechanism of protection. So I wasn't pessimistic, but I was never optimistic. I was just numb and neutral, to be honest. Because that was how I found I could protect myself emotionally. So of course I wasn't, and I would never hope for that. And I was walking my dogs a few weeks later, talking to my sister on the phone, and I said, God, I feel sick. I feel so sick. And again, I said, I can't take a test. I was petrified because of what had happened last time. Petrified of becoming pregnant again, even though that's what I wanted so much in the world, because I was so frightened it would disappear again. And then I woke up about a week later, and I just thought, I've got to take this bloody test. And shaking, I went and took it, and this line came up, like, out of nowhere, like, bold as anything, like, darker than the control line, which I'd never experienced in my last pregnancy. It was like this little thing I was holding up against the light, seeing this little line. And I just sat on the bed, and my whole body was shaking, and I rang my husband, and I said, can you go somewhere quiet at work? You know, I'd always had this vision of telling him in this wonderful way, but I was just so shocked. And I rang him and I said, baby, I'm pregnant. He was like, what? I don't understand what. So that happened. And my mum and dad were still away, and I can't remember if it was a day or two later, and they were coming back, and they were literally landing in the airport at 7 a.m. and I sent them a text and said, call me when you land, which I don't normally do. Obviously, I speak to them when they get back. And my mum rang, and I just went, ah, I'm pregnant. And she was like, I knew it. And, you know, without going into too much detail, my husband and I had sort of stopped really bothering to try, because we felt it was not possible for us. We were told it was never going to happen for us naturally. We were literally told that by the best experts in the country that we'd spoken to and had consultations with. It wasn't going to happen for us. And so, you know, I'd missed my opportunity to do it on the day of ovulation, which is obviously something we would always try and do, because that was your best chance. And I think we'd probably hit about four days before then. And I was at a trade show that weekend that I was ovulating, and didn't do it then. So thanks to London Edge, because I think I technically conceived when I was there, lifting things and doing all that, which during IVF, I was so careful to remain in this little cotton wool ball. And of course, biology takes over sometimes, and I'm so sorry for this story if people are still going through their journey. And I am so conscious of talking about pregnancy, and so conscious of the fact that we ended that pain within about 3 to 4 years. I got pregnant, and I know that it doesn't happen for everyone. And I apologize from the bottom of my heart if this, my joy of my discussing our pregnancy and how we got there naturally, is painful or hurtful or difficult for anyone else. So I'm sorry for that, because I know that pain, not knowing when it's going to happen for you and people telling you they're pregnant, and it's so hard to deal with. And it's something that I feel very passionate about, that we as women have to be so supportive to other women going through these journeys. And today I'm sitting here recording this podcast, looking at the monitor of my 8-month-old little baby girl, who is such a gift. And I want to share my story, because I'm a very private person, and I believe that the person that I want to project to the world is this altogether successful rock of a person who just gets shit done and gets on with life. And I'm a happy-go-lucky person, and I hope that I bring positive energy to a room and make other people feel positive too. And I want to share this story because behind the curtains there was all this going on. And my message today is that if you're going through adversity, trust me, you can still create a life alongside that. I don't know how to heal emotional pain. I'm not a psychologist, but I do know how to create satisfaction and self-worth in a situation where you feel such an abundant lack of it in other areas of your life. So that is where my passion comes from, and that's where Diablo and Le Q comes from. I want to help people strive to create a life that they want and find balance. And you know, now the greatest gift in the world means that I have to really struggle to find balance in my life, because you know, I am who I am, and I'm a mum now, but I'm also still Lindsay, the businesswoman, and I still want to do that every day, and I can't all the time because I'm looking after her, which is joyous. So I have to find a balance, and I have to redefine what my day looks like. You know, I don't have the time to do 2 hours on my mindset anymore because I wake up and I look after my baby. But you know, I've carved out different ways of finding productive time in my day, and that again is something that I feel I can really, I've learned to do, and I can help other people do and find a way to be successful beyond our own excuses, which is I don't have the time anymore. You know, I'm a full-time mum at the moment on my maternity leave. How do I find time to still do the things that I enjoy and I'm passionate about? And believe me, I've got a baby who still doesn't sleep that well, so sleep deprivation, short naps. We've only just in the last month or so gotten to, I think she's been asleep for 2 hours and 10 minutes now in a morning nap. And that's when I find the time to do things like this. So, okay. I hope that this has been helpful. I hope that me sharing my journey gives you some context as to why I do the things I do and why I believe I can help people, and gives you a little insight into me as a person. I reach out to anyone going through this, please contact me. If I can offer anything for you, because my when you go through infertility, it doesn't matter whether it happens in 6 months or 6 years or whatever, while you're going through it, you are convinced it's never going to happen for you. So don't dismiss someone's journey if they've only gone through it for a year, or they're feeling sad because they haven't conceived within 6 months, because at the time you don't know when it's going to happen. And I look back now and think, if someone had told me on day one of us starting, you'll have a baby in 4 years, 4.5 years, I'd have gone, fine, I'm going to travel, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. But while you're going through it, don't tell a woman, enjoy this time before you have a baby, because when they come, your life will change and you can't do X, Y, and Z, because it's so heartbreaking. So my message is to still try and find something that gives you joy in your life. And if I can help you with that, please get in touch. One of my idols, Tony Robbins, always says that adversity creates the most successful and driven people, because you have to experience what it's like to not have everything that you want to give you the drive and motivation to go out there and get it. My challenge was something I couldn't make happen myself. I didn't have full control over, and I had to plow that need to strive and be successful and feel good about myself in other things. So I'm going to end it there, and I'm going to continue on this conversation. Once I release this podcast, I'll continue the conversation on our Facebook page and our Facebook group. So please search Diablo and LeQ on Facebook to find out more, and contact me, Lindsay LeQ, LeKeux. Find me on social media if I can be of any help at all. So this has been me, Lindsay LeQ, for our Diablo and LeQ podcasts, and sending you positivity and love, and I look forward to sharing more of my life with you again soon. Take care and goodbye.